Calendar for oral argument is the state of Minnesota versus Bernard Wayne Quist. And we were... Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you here on the matter of state versus Quist?
Yes, I sure am.
Excellent. And
may I just come on up?
Yeah, you can take a minute to settle yourself if you wish. I understand there is just one counsel presenting an argument in this case because we received only a brief from appellant. So you will have 15 minutes to present your oral argument. You do not get to rebut yourself, so you don't get that extra 5 minutes. But when you are willing or when you are ready, you may approach the podium. I will just remind you that you will have 15 minutes to make your argument, and it's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent.
Wonderful. Thank you. May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Thomas Braun. I am attorney for appellant Wayne Quist, who is before the court this morning on an appeal from a sentencing matter stemming from charges in Wabasha County on a 4-count complaint charging him with numerous counts of criminal vehicular homicide. The Colonel Quist pled guilty to count 3 of criminal vehicular homicide on November 23rd, 2027. He was sentenced and received a departure from the Minnesota sentencing guidelines, which essentially sentenced him to 180 days of incarceration plus 100 days on a staggered sentence. And it's really the staggered sentence that we're before the court here arguing. And the applicable case law is found under Minnesota Statute Section 244.11. And we're asking this court to evaluate the sentence of the district court de novo and analyze whether the sentence is unreasonable and excessive based on the individual circumstances of the appellant.
And before you go forward, I think you answered my question, but I was confused in looking at your brief because you posit the argument that the district court abused its discretion by not granting a sentencing departure. But I think the court did.
It did.
All
it
right,
did
so,
grant the sentencing departure, yes.
So are we concerned in this appeal with the provisions of 609.135, or are we really talking about how the district court fashioned its probationary sentence?
Really how the court fashioned its probationary sentence. And I think the refusal of the court to grant the departure under the 609.1056 factors into the analysis that I think this court must take a look at in terms of the appellant's service, in terms of his veteran's service and the PTSD that he suffered as a result of his service. And I think that that's a critical factor when analyzing really the issue before this court as to whether the staggered sentence, the 100 days over 10 years, you know, is in fact appropriate.
Hey, counsel, before you go any further, I do want to clarify, though. I mean, typically we review these decisions as to whether or not to grant a dispositional or durational departure for an abuse of discretion, but you're asking us to do a de novo review?
Correct.
Why would we do a de novo review? It seems like it would be an abuse of discretion, which is our standard.
Yeah, under Minnesota Statute 244.11, I think the court has the authority to review this matter de novo. I think it also rises to an abuse of discretion standard. So, but I think that the statute talking about, you know, this court's ability to determine whether a sentence is excessive and violative of Minnesota law is a de novo review standard.
How are we equipped to do that? I mean, we're not the ones who hear the testimony, who review the victim impact statements, who review the letters, who hear from the Veterans Court coordinator and all the information the district court received and considered.
Yeah, I think,
I'm not sure how we do a de novo review of how the district court put all those factors together in fashioning its staggered sentence?
Yeah, this case is very unique, Your Honor, to the extent that I think there are two major components to the sentencing that have been largely left out of the court's findings of fact. One, the letter from Dr. Radke, which talks about Colonel Quist's medical condition and how his medical condition is fragile. He suffered a heart attack just prior to the pretrial conference. She talked about how incarceration would be detrimental to his health in the event that the court were to sentence him to extensive incarceration. And what the court did here is not just sentence him to 180 days, but is requiring him for the next 10 years to come back every year and serve 10 days. So at 96 years old, this defendant will be potentially serving 10 days of incarceration. At 86, his doctor is saying that incarceration is seriously detrimental to his health. State versus Wright stands for the proposition that the court must exist.
I don't want to stop you, pause you.
Sure.
I only want to pause you. I don't want to take you off track. I'm not sure how that addresses, and it goes to the merits, but I'm not sure how that addresses the nature of our review, de novo versus abuse of discretion. All of you, your argument right now seems to be that this was something that went beyond the court's discretion as opposed to a de novo review. So help me to understand. Maybe you were going to get there, but so far I'm hearing only a basis to reverse on arguably on discretionary grounds.
Yeah, if you look at 244.11, this court, I think, has the authority and the ability to look at the record as a whole and examine what the court did in terms of the legality of the sentence. And usually this would come up in terms of if the sentence is excessive. So this case is unique to the extent that this is a departure from the guidelines. So he's already getting the benefit of, you know, a departure, which, you know, we certainly appreciated at the time and appreciate now. But given the individual circumstances, I think under 244.11, de novo review is appropriate. If you look back to that statute, I think there'll be some guidance for the court there.
Have you seen any, do you point us, I don't see it in your brief, to any case law that construes 244.11 as providing an appellate court with de novo review?
Under this context, no, I cannot. Dr. Radke's letter, and if the court evaluates this under abuse of discretion standard, I think this is a critical piece of evidence that was not factored in the findings of fact. And under State versus Wright, which stands for the proposition that a defendant can be unamenable to incarceration, and that's essentially what we have here. And we have that at Colonel Quist's age of 86. And certainly it goes to stand to reason that he will be unamenable to incarceration as he gets older.
I pause you just for one moment there. Take you to another big picture question before you get too deep into the weeds. You're asking us to vacate confinement at all. Wouldn't a victory in your favor, in your client's favor, simply lead us to remanding for the district court to vacate the current sentence, but then to resentence and perhaps, I mean, with no requirement, why would we impose a requirement as to what the terms of the result would be?
Yeah, I think a remand with instructions would certainly be sufficient, especially given the court's lack of consideration regarding Dr. Radke's letter, his physical health, how a staggered sentence serves the interests of justice in terms of future incarceration.
I guess my question is, I mean, how confident are you that your client might end up in a worse position where the court says, all right, well, instead of a staggered sentence, we'll give you a longer current sentence and then not staggered? I mean, that seems to at least be the discretionary part of the district court's decision.
To some extent, yes. I mean, the court has significant discretion in terms of sentencing. We're asking for a vacation because I think that it is appropriate that the court has to consider these factors. And I think that under the current sentencing order from the court and the findings of fact, it's just absent with respect to the physical impairities that Colonel Quist had, as well as what it will have in the future in terms of the staggered sentence. So a remand with instructions, I think, would also be sufficient to address the concerns that we're raising before the court.
But what evidence is there in the record that the district court did not consider that? I mean, ultimately, the district court did grant a downward dispositional departure. So I'm having a hard time understanding why that the district court did not consider that as part of the sentence that it ultimately fashioned. It did grant a downward dispositional departure. So this isn't a situation where this court said, no, I'm not going to. I'm just executed sentence, and that's it.
Right, and I appreciate that, Your Honor, and I certainly am grateful that there was a dispositional departure granted. I think that there's two factors that the court didn't consider in its findings of fact, and the refusal of the court to grant departure under veteran statute 609.1056, I think, leads to a bigger concern and bigger issue. How does the appellant's PTSD factor in terms of his incarceration? So you have an individual here who's served his country his whole life. He's got PTSD, which stems directly from his service. The report from Dr. Lansing talked about, you know, the nature of incarceration and what effect that has on him because of his own mental health impairment that is generated from his service. The court's refusal to grant departure and acknowledge that portion of this case, that his self-medication from using alcohol related to PTSD was a significant factor in the course of the commission of this offense. Sentencing him to a staggered sentence, 100 days over 10 years, with that mindset of having to go back into incarceration for someone who has post-traumatic stress disorder, the refusal to acknowledge that in the findings of fact or acknowledge them even on the record in terms of the sentencing, we believe constitutes an excessive sentence.
But there's no requirement that the district court even state on the record its reasons for departing or not departing.
Correct.
So case law doesn't seem to support that position that you're arguing that the district court never explained why it didn't take that particular factor into account.
And our argument is that these factors are so significant. If you read Dr. Radke's letter, if you look at Dr. Lansing's opinion with regard to the assessment that was conducted, that these circumstances for this defendant, who's 86, has had no criminal history, that requiring him to come back into incarceration over the course of the next 10 years is an excessive sentence under those circumstances. And this is a very unique case. I mean, I have to say, the facts which gave rise to the plea, his alcohol and concentration, the causation involved in the offense, all of these things are significant factors that I think the court did take into consideration to some degree.
Well, but yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a portion of the sentencing hearing, and I mean, the district court references the proactive steps your client took to address the underlying PTSD, which the court acknowledges is sort of the root problem here, and stems completely from your client's service to the country under very difficult circumstances. So, and part of his probation is participating in Veterans Treatment Court. I mean, I have a hard time, you know, sort of accepting the notion that the district court didn't give proper, you know, did not recognize those aspects of your client's history and the role they played in this offense.
I think that the court recognized them to a degree, but as it relates to the staggered sentence, you know, usually a staggered sentence is a benefit to a defendant that they can put off time and usually have that time forgiven in the event that they're, you know, in compliance with their probation, they write the district court judge, that sentence is forgiven if they're, you know, doing a good job on probation. There's not an opportunity for that here. This is a...
But don't staggered sentences, I think you're right, in some circumstances that's true, but where you have a victim, in the sense that you do here, you know, this is not a unique case in the sense that staggered sentences are designed to just bring awareness, you know, every year on the anniversary. So it's not just a matter of making sure a probationer is continuing to do their probation, but that there continues to be an accountability sort of piece. I mean, do you agree with that?
I think that's entirely the case here, that the court imposed this 10-day sentence. There's no mistaking the fact that this takes place on the day of the incident, right? So it's
And what's wrong? What makes that an abuse of discretion? Simply the unique circumstances of your client's health and age and those things?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, he's 86. He's in poor health. He has post-traumatic stress disorder. So to continue to force him to come back, and I get that there is a significant need for accountability, for punishment. You know, all of those ideals in terms of sentencing are important factors. But with respect to Colonel Quist and his circumstances, how that incarceration will affect him individually, we do not believe serves the interests of justice and is excessive to the extent that his own personal circumstances are just not conducive with having incarceration. And under Wright, State versus Wright, I think that the court should have factored that in terms of if the court thought that essentially a 280-day sentence was appropriate, which is really what it imposed, you know, another 100 days over the course of the next 10 years, then it should have done that up front and thought about what effects that would have on him 10 years down the road, 9 years down the road, when his life expectancy is really only 5 years away. So there's significant issues I think that the court kind of missed in terms of how that staggered sentence would impact the defendant and whether he's even capable of being incarcerated at that point.
But didn't the state, in fact, urge a 30 days every year staggered sentence? I mean, a significant more than 10 days every year.
I think it did. And
so doesn't the fact that the district court did something substantially less than 30 days suggest the court, in fact, considered the issues you're identified?
Yeah, I think that the state argued for a 120-day executed jail sentence at the outset and then a staggered sentence, you know, from there. So I think the court actually went above what the prosecutor was asking for.
Well, as to the initial incarceration, right, but not as to the staggered part of the incarceration.
Correct. And, you know, the pre-sentence investigation also recommends...
But to Judge Berkman's question, I don't know if you actually addressed it yet. Doesn't that reflect the district court's appreciation or at least consideration for the very issues that you're raising?
Thank you. I think that the underlying issue as to whether a staggered sentence is appropriate, given the appellant's individual health circumstances and his mental health, is absent from any analysis. No one has been able to articulate the prosecutor. May I just finish?
You may finish. Yeah.
Thank you. The prosecutor or the court, why a staggered sentence is necessary. It's 5 years, 10 years down the road for this defendant to come back to jail and serve more executed time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your helpful argument and briefing in what is a very difficult case.
Thank you.
And sad all the way around.
But a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, this concludes our oral argument calendar this morning. We have enjoyed our time in Rochester. And with that, we are in recess.
All rise. Minnesota.